All right. So we are starting right away. Now, this is a little bit of a different source page than I typically have given you because what I've done here is I've listed at the beginning pretty much all the sources that we're going to try to run through this morning or this afternoon or evening. Really, my goal today is part two of what we started last week, is to introduce us to Yehoshua the leader, Yehoshua the disciple of Moshe, Yehoshua who emerges in the story of the spies to be his own leader, the Yehoshua who takes over for Moshe. I want to kind of do a bird's eye view of all the places where Yehoshua is mentioned in Chumash. That's an ambitious project. The only thing we're not going to do in detail is go through the story of the spies, because that's later in our curriculum. But I want to do a bird's eye view of where he comes into the story and what role he plays. It's very important for us. And then there's a couple of pieces of that we're going to expand on. But in order to save paper and trees, rather than copying all of those sources onto the page, I've just given you the references to them, and we're going to run through them in the website alhatorah.org, which is where I usually display Tanakh from. So if everybody's with me, we're going to jump in. We're good. Thumbs up. We're ready to go. Ready to roll. All right. So we started this last week. Vayihi achrei mot Moshe eved Hashem, after the death of Moshe, servant of God. Yomer Hashem al Yehoshua ben Nun mishareit Moshe lemor. God said to Yehoshua, the disciple or the minister of Moshe, saying, Moshe avdi met, v'yata kum avor t'yadeh. Moshe, my servant, is dead. It's now you to take your job to take Israel over the Yarden. And we spent some time talking about a little bit of the background of Yehoshua from Shevet Ephraim and why the leader of Israel was chosen, Dafka from Shevet Ephraim, a conjecture that appears in the book by Ramadan on Sefer Bamidbar. Now you're welcome to look at it if you wish in more in writing. We are going to jump into the question of Yehoshua. Where does he come from? What do we know about him? Where does he appear in Chumash? And in particular, we're going to eventually come back to the question of why he is described here as Misharet Moshe. Moshe is no longer. The whole point of this verse is to tell us that Moshe has died. Yeshua is not Misharet Moshe anymore. He was. So there's much to discuss here. And I want to start, and I'm going to just run through this source by source. We're going to start in Shmot Perek Yud Zayin. Shmot Perek Yud Zayin is where, and I mentioned this last week also, is the story of the battle with Amalek. Amalek comes unannounced, he comes by surprise attack, and he fights with Israel in Rephidim. This is before Matan Torah. This is between the story of the splitting of the sea and Matan Torah itself. The end of Parshat Bishalach. Moshe turns to Yeshua and he says, go fight. Go lead the people into battle and wage war with Amalek. And we noticed last week already, but it's relevant more here, that Yehoshua is introduced without any fanfare. We don't know who he is. We don't know the background. We don't even know Yehoshua ben so-and-so, right? We don't even know who he is yet. This is the first reference of Yehoshua in Chumash, and he's referred to as Yehoshua without even Yehoshua ben Nun. So clearly he's somebody who is Moshe turns to right there, so he's obviously next to Moshe, and which is interesting because Moshe isn't necessarily with the people. Moshe is at the rock of where he hits the rock and the water comes out. Moshe, together with the elders of Israel, went to the rock in Chorev, which is on Har Sinai, and hit the rock and water will come out. And Moshe did so, le'enei ziknei Yisrael, in the presence of the elders of Israel. And the water started to flow down to Rephidim, where the people were. So Moshe is not even amongst the people, which is why he tells Yehoshua, go and fight Amalek, because I, together with Aaron Achur, will stand at the top of the hill, Rosh HaGiva. And so that is the context. Moshe is with the elders. Yeshua is clearly with Moshe. And they hit the rock. Suddenly they turn around and Israel is fighting a war with Amalek and Rephidim. Yes, Yeshua kasher amar la Moshe, yilachem b'Amalek. And Yeshua goes and he fights with Amalek. I'm not going to get into right now the issue of Moshe and the staff. It's not our issue. But Pasuk Gimel, Vayachalosh Yehoshua et Amalek, v'et Amalek v'char. Yehoshua is successful at weakening Amalek. And the story should end there. Really, the story should end there. That's our first introduction of Yehoshua. And if I stop there, I'm actually going to hide that part of the screen. If I stop there, what do we know about Yehoshua? We know that Yehoshua is part of the Ziknei Yisrael. He's certainly part of the group. He's not necessarily older. We'll see he's much younger. He's called Na'ar at a later point in Sefer Shemot. So he's not from the elders in age, but he's certainly there together with Moshe in the small group that went up to Har Chorev to hit the rock and let the waters flow down to Rephidim. And Moshe turns to him to lead the battle. So clearly he's also a figure who has a military position, right? Whether he's the head of the army or whether he's a particularly known warrior, right? But it's not by accident that Moshe turns to Yeshua and he says, go and put together an army. Bachar lanu anashim, betzei hilachem ba'amalek, go and fight against Amalek. And really, that should be all we know. But the Torah ends here with two verses, which is really quite extraordinary. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, Ktov zot zikaron basefer besim beozne Yehoshua. Write this as a memory, memorial in a book, and give it to Yehoshua and put it in Yehoshua's ear. Kimacho emched zecher Amalek mitachat hashemayim. I will one day wipe out Amalek from under the heaven. Meaning that there is this promise to Moshe made by God that there will come a reckoning with Yehoshua at some time in the future. Moshe builds Mizbeach, etc. Milchama laHashem ba'Amalek midor dor, God's war against Amalek from generation to generation. What's fascinating is who is charged with hearing that promise. Sim bo'oznei Yehoshua. Now, it's not clear here if that's because Yehoshua fought the war. So in a sense, Moshe and Yehoshua partnered in the battle against Amalek. So it makes sense for Yehoshua to be part of that comfort and that promise that there will come a reckoning. Or if it's because Yehoshua is destined to some future role, that is unclear because it doesn't say what that role is. But already you get a hint that Yehoshua's role is bigger than just a warrior at that moment. And so the mystery is, we're going to park that mystery here and move to the next part of the story. The next time we encounter Yehoshua in Chumash, remember, this is all pre-Sefer Yehoshua, this is all in Chumash. The next time we encounter Yehoshua is at the story of Matan Torah. Now, if you remember the events of Matan Torah, Moshe is told to prepare the people, get the people ready, and in Parsha Peshalach, it talks about separating the boundary of the mountains, that nobody goes up the mountain, nobody touches the mountain in 3 days in preparation, and Moshe goes up the mountain by himself. That's the description in Parshat Yitro. There's a slightly different variation of that description in Perek Chof Dalet of Shemot, which is the end of Parshat Mishpatim. Just to clarify, there is El Moshe Amar, Aleh al Hashem Ata v'Aron Nadav v'Avihu v'Shivim Mizikne Yisrael v'Yishtachavitim Merachok. Moshe is told to go up the mountain together with Aaron and Nadav and Avihu and 70 of the elders of Israel and bow from a distance. There's a whole discussion as to what this chapter describes. Is it a repeat or an elaboration or a description of Mamar HaSinai separated from the rest of the story of the events of HaSinai by Parshat Yitro, Parshat Mishpatim? Or is it a second moment? Moshe goes up the mountain for an initial presentation of the Ten Commandments. He comes down the mountain, and then he presents here, and then he goes back up. That's unclear. Right? It's Machloket Rashi and the Ramban where to place this chapter. So far, everybody with me? Yeah. But in this, whether it's the original events of Sinai, which are being repeated, or whether it's a second moment Moshe goes up the mountain, in this case, he's accompanied up to a point by Aaron, Nadav, Avihu, and the 70 elders. Who's not in this list?
Yeshua.
He's not mentioned in this list. Vinigash Moshe levado el Hashem. Moshe approaches God, vehem lo yigashu. Moshe approaches God levado, alone. They do not approach. Ve'am lo yalu imo, and the people shall not go with him. In other words, the instruction here is for Moshe, for the people to be in their place, Moshe to with the elders and Aaron, Nadav, and Avihu to come to a little bit closer to the mountain, Vishtachavita Merachok, and from a distance bow, and then Moshe will leave all of those people, and he alone will go up the mountain. That's the description. Moshe comes to the people, he tells them the laws, he tells them, and they all say, we'll do, we will obey. Moshe writes it down, and he reads it to the people, and he builds 12 mizbechot, and this is all not our subject for today. He makes a brit with them, he sprinkles the blood, he takes this book that he wrote called Sefer Abrit, he reads it to the people, and they all proclaim famously, Na'aseh v'nishma. This is, again, if it's before Matan Torah, then it's Na'aseh v'nishma before the Torah was given. If it's after, then it's Na'aseh v'nishma over the Ten Commandments and the elaboration of Parshat Mishpatim. Moshe sprinkles the blood on the people, he makes a brit with them, and here comes the key piece, Pasuk Tet. Vayal Moshe Aaron Nadav Avihu v'shivim mizikne Yisrael. Moshe Aaron Nadav and Avihu and the 70 elders go up as instructed. Pasuk Yud Bet. Skip the next super not our subject. Vayomer Hashem Moshe Ale Eli Hahara. Okay, so now they've all come a little bit closer. Now it's time for you, Moshe, to come up alone. And I will give you the tablets, I will give you the Ten Commandments. Up until now it's been Torah Shabbat Peh, orally. Now I will give you the tablets. Moshe and Yehoshua, his minister, his servant, went up, and Moshe went up the mountain. And he tells the elders, you stay here until we return to you. And Aaron and Hur are with you. You, anything you need, you deal with them. So now the question is, what happened when Moshe went up the mountain with Yehoshua? First of all, how did Yeshua end up in the conversation? He wasn't mentioned until now. He leaves the Zekeinim, Aaron, and Hur behind. And it seems that Moshe and Yeshua go up, and then twice it says that Moshe went up alone. So there's some discussion. Where is Yeshua in this process? You understand? So there's a textual nuance here. Where is Yeshua in this process? And the commentaries are divided over what role Yehoshua has at this moment. And this is where we're first time we are introduced to Yehoshua as Mishartó, as his helper, his servant, his minister, whatever the Sharet, whatever that means. See, I'm going to take you over to the source page, which I put in the chat earlier. If somebody wants to repost it just for the benefit of all. Actually, let's just do this quickly. Okay. In this context, when Moshe goes up together with Yehoshua, Machloket and the Rishonim, what do I do with this? And Rashi points it out, said, Lo yadati ma tivo shel Yehoshua kan. What's Yehoshua doing here? So, before I get to Rashi's answer, the Ramban suggests That Yoshua was simply one of the 70 elders. But he's not that old. He's a na'ar, right? He's much younger than everybody else. And why is he going up the mountain with Yoshua, with Moshe? And says Rashi, Le'edati mativo, Ve'omer ani, Shaya ha-talmid milaveh l'rav, Ad mokom hagbalat tchumeah. It would seem to me that the Talmud, the student, in this case Yoshua, accompanied his master, his teacher, up to as far as he could go. Because I know he's not allowed to go further because the border of the mountain, nobody could go up. Moshe went up alone. And Yoshua put his tent there. He pitched his tent for Yoshua Natasha Mualo. And he waited for 40 days. And the proof that he waited there for 40 days, we're going to look at momentarily, is when Moshe comes down the mountain, before he reaches the camp of Israel of the story of the golden calf, he encounters Yoshua and has a whole conversation with Yoshua, distanced from the camp. And Rashbam, the Ibn Ezra simply adds, what is he going to eat there for 40 days? No worry, because the man was there. He's still part of the camp. In other words, he goes up further than the Zkenim, according to Rashi, than the Zkenim and Aaron and Hur, because he's not in the camp when Moshe comes down the mountain at the story of the golden calf. Right? Who is in the camp? Aaron and Hur. Meaning, Aaron and Hur stayed with the people. They went with Moshe a certain distance, but at the end of the day, Moshe went up alone and he left Aaron and Hur in charge of the people. But Yoshua went with Moshe up to as far as he could go. How far was that? It's not 100% clear, but if you look at, let's take a quick look at Chet Egel, which is Shmot Lamed Bet, Pashat Kitisa. The people saw that Moshe tarried in his coming down the mountain. 40 days later, they come to Aaron and they say, "Kum aselanu Elohim, make us some gods to go before us." Again, the story of the golden calf is not my subject, but clearly Aaron was with that group. Aaron is with the people. As Moshe comes down, God says to Moshe, "Go down, your people have sinned." Moshe prays on behalf of the people and he turns to come down the mountain. Vayifin pasuk tetvav, vayifin vayered Moshe minahar, together with the two tablets he's carrying now, the tablets in his hands, ushnei luchot ha'edut biyado. Pasuk yudzayin, vayishma Yoshua et kol ha'am bireo. Yoshua hears the cries of the people, the uproar of the people. He hears the noise, but he's not there, because he doesn't know what it is. Vayomer Moshe, he says to Moshe, Ko milchama b'machaneh. There's a voice of war in the camp. To which Moshe turns to Yoshua and says, Ein kol anot kvura ve'ein kol anot chalusha. There's no sound of shouting of victory. There's no sounds of defeat. This is not the sounds of war. This is the sound of shouting of revelry. Kol anot anachi shomea. And so they approached the people together. Vayi kasher karav el ha-machaneh. Meaning, he comes to the camp only after he has this conversation with Yoshua, further from the people, far enough away from the people that Yoshua can't see or hear what's going on. In other words, the conclusion of all of this, and this is what Rashi basically says, is that Moshe went up. Moshe took Aaron and Hur up to a certain point, then he sent them back to the people. Moshe and Yoshua go up the mountain up to a certain point, and then maybe Moshe goes up by himself the rest of the way. That's what Rashi says. So Yoshua was not amongst the people of Chet Ega, which may also explain a little bit of why he's not tainted by Chet Ega, and therefore can take over the leadership of Israel even after the story of the spies. We'll get to that issue. He's not tainted at all by Chet Ego because he's not there. Second of all, he's more closer physically to Moshe than he is to the people. He's far enough that he can't see what's going on in the camp. He can only hear. So that's amazing that Yahushua is on the mountain during Mount HaSinai. Now, is he up at the top of the mountain? Rashi says, no. I'm not 100% sure. Maybe. Because if you look two chapters later, actually one chapter later, in Shmot Lamed Gimel, after Chet Egel, after the people have been punished, and after before the people have been forgiven, Moshe took his tent, Moshe yikach et ha'ohel, v'nata lo michutz l'machane, and he took it outside of the camp, far away from the camp. And he called it the Ohel Moed. Why did he call it the Ohel Moed? They don't have the Mishkan yet. And all who sought God would go to outside the camp, because God was still angry at the people, and they would go to this tent of meeting, which was the tent of Moshe. And when Moshe would come out of the tent, v'yakit seit Moshe la Ohel, the people would stand, they would look at the opening of the tent, they would look at Moshe's back, v'yi ad bo'ohel Ohel, until Moshe went into the tent. And when Moshe would come into the tent, listen very carefully, when Moshe would come into the tent, the cloud would hover over the tent, meaning this tent of Moshe, which he took outside of the physical camp of Israel, is now the replacement of HaSinai, the replacement of the Mishkan. This is the Ohel Moed where the Shekhinah rests. And Moshe alone resides inside this tent. They would see the cloud opposite, hovering over the entrance, and they would bow down, and Moshe would go into the tent. He would speak to God face to face, like a man speaks to his friend. And then, and then he would go back to the camp. But when he was in the tent, he was speaking to God. Which tent? Moshe's tent, which was now the role of the Ohel Moed. This verse concludes, Umisharato Yehoshua ben Nun na'ar lo yamish mitoch ha'ohel. Yehoshua ben Nun's servant, young servant, na'ar, did not depart from the tent. He went with Moshe everywhere Moshe went. Where Moshe was, Yehoshua was at his right hand. You could not separate them. Even it would seem into the tent of meeting. Lo yamish b'toch ha'ohel. So, I don't know, if he can go into the Ohel with the Shekhinah when Moshe was talking to God, maybe he could go up to High Sinai too. I don't know. But, certainly in this context, Yahushua's role is extraordinary in his connection to Moshe, even to the point of being inside the tent of meeting with God and Moshe. Misharto Yehoshua ben Nun na'ar lo yamish mitoch ha'ohel. And that's the story of Yehoshua in Matan Torah and in Chet Ha'egel. This is all the Yehoshua in Sefer Shemot, where he's presented as Moshe's key disciple. As we move into the story of the next piece of Yehoshua's life, which is the story of the spies, we're going to move from Sefer Shemot to Sefer Bamidbar. And move to Perek Yud Gimel. Am I going too fast? I'm pretty good. We're with you. With thumbs up. We're good. Okay. Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Lebor, Shlach Lecha Anashim Yaturu Et Eretz Kanaan Asher Ani Noten LeBnei Yisrael. God says to Moshe, send people to. I hate this translation because the word latur is not the same as to spy. Liragel is to spy, Latur is to see. They were tayarim, they were tourists. They were cartographers, they were mapping out the land. There's a lot to unpack in Parashat Merag, in Parashat Shlach.
Excuse me a second on this.
What happened?
Consider that they're more like a pilot trip, like they were staking it out.
Yeah, there's for sure, there's a whole discussion.
It's
the
not
word
touring like I'm going back to my old place and
I understand that, but it's
but it's to choose where to live, and that's why Kalev did the right thing.
That's why I said it's cartography. They were mapping out the land, mapping out the tribes, mapping out the territory. There's a lot to unpack about the word latur, which is to see. The word literally means to see. But certainly not to spy. That was not the mission here. Again, the story of the Meraglim, Parshat Shlach, is enormous and impactful, and we'll look at it in more detail later in Sefer Yehoshua, because I want to compare Yehoshua's spy mission to Moshe's. But at this point in time, we have a list of all the tribe leaders. Now, they're different from the Nisi'im. I want to make this very clear. They're different from the Nisi'im. They're either a generation later, the generation younger, sometimes two generations younger, but they are a different list. The Nisi'im are listed in Bamidbar Perek Aleph. The spies are listed in Bamidbar Perek Yud Gimel. They are a different group. Not one of these appears in the list of the Nisi'im. That's very important for us. And amongst the list of the Tayarim, Anashim, Miraglim, however you want to describe them, we have Mate Ephraim, Hoshea ben Nun. Hoshea ben Nun appears in the list of Ephraim. Who is Hoshea ben Nun? We only have one ben Nun with that name, Hoshea Yehoshua. And then Pasuk Tetzayin, Eile Shmot Anashim Shalach Moshe Latura Ta'aretz. These are the names of the people that Moshe sent to see out the land, whatever, we'll leave the translation. Vayikra Moshe leHoshea ben Nun Yehoshua. Moshe names, calls Hoshea ben Nun Yehoshua. And that raises two questions right away. Number one, why does he rename Hoshea's name to Yehoshua? And two, when does he rename Hoshea's name to Yehoshua? Because we've seen him throughout Sefer Shemot as Yehoshua. Yehoshua ben Nun, Misharet Moshe, Yehoshua. Right? And suddenly we're told that in Bamidbar Perek Yud Gimel, which is a year later, Moshe changes his name to Yehoshua. So I'm going to park the question of when, and we'll get to it to the end of the Shir today. It's a subject I want to come back to at the end of our discussion. But the question of why is also important. So here I'm going to jump to Rashi. Rashi famously says that Yeshua's name, Moshe changed Hoshea's name to Yehoshua because he prayed for him. He t'palel alav. What was the prayer? Ka Yoshiacha miatzat miraglim. May God save you from the evil counsel of the spies. Which, of course, raises the question, if Moshe knew that the spy mission was a failure, then why would he send them? Again, in the spy mission, we could get lost in several shiurim. We're not going to. I just point this out. According to Rashi, we'll see another opinion in a few moments, Moshe names him here in the context of a special prayer, adding the Yud to create God's name in his name from Hoshea to Yehoshua, in order to pray for him that God should spare him from the sin of the spies, raising the question, so the second question of, so why is he referred to Yehoshua much earlier? Simplest answer for Rashi would be what we call Nikra'el Shem Sofo, that sometimes events happen and names of events or people or places are changed. And because we already know that the Torah is written in hindsight, the Torah records the name already in earlier references to the place. For example, in Bereshit, Beersheva. Moshe is named Beersheva according to the Chumash in the conversation between or Beit El. Yaakov names the Beit El is a better example. Yaakov, running away from Esav, names the place Beit El. But Beit El is mentioned already in the story of Abraham. He pitched his tent east to Beit El. So they say, okay, so even though it was named later, because the Torah was written even later than that, we are already using that name earlier. And so Hoshea is named here and not earlier, according to Rashi. We'll see another opinion in a few moments. But first, I want to jump through a couple of other references to Yehoshua. I'm not going to go through the whole story of the spies. We all know Yehoshua was one of the spies. He was one of the two that came back and spoke positively and faithfully, and therefore was chosen to lead the people or to not be destroyed amongst the punishment of the generation of the spies. And then later he is appointed to be Moshe's successor. Okay. I'm going to leave this. We're going to jump 38 years forward. We're now 38 years later, after the generation of the spies has died out. Moshe is at the end of his life. Moshe is ready to part Bnei Israel, and God says to Moshe, "Vayomer Hashem o Moshe." This is Bamidbar Perak Chavzayin. Vayomer Hashem o Moshe, Ale al Har Ha'avarim Hazeh, come up the mountain and see the land, because you will not enter the land. Fine. Moshe's response: Yifkod Hashem Elokei Ruchot L'chol Basar Ish Al Ha'eda. Wait a second, you haven't appointed a successor. You need to appoint somebody. God, the spirit of all, who knows the spirit of all flesh, should appoint somebody over the congregation. Who will go before them and come before them. I will tell you now, and I think we've mentioned this before, the phrase latzet v'lavo, to go and come, is a biblical idiom for leading the military army in battle. Wherever you see the phrase latzet v'lavo, will go before them and come before them, that means to be the general leading his troops in battle. Always. We can talk about it in another time. You look at Rashi there, that's what he says. And he says, God should not leave his flock without a shepherd. Now notice, in Moshe's request, he does not specify who the leader should be. He just says, God, don't leave the people without a leader. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, kach lechat Yehoshua ben Nun. Oh, we have a leader. Who's the logical choice, the most obvious choice? He's been with you from day one. He's been with you on the mountain of Mamre Sinai. He was with you in the tent of the Omoed. He wasn't tainted by Machete Egel. He fought against Amalek. Yehoshua ben Nun. Isha sheruach bo. V'samachtat yadcha alav. This man in whom there is spirit, lay your hands on him, meaning transfer over to him a little bit of the Ruach HaKodesh of Nevuah, v'natata mehodcha alav, place part of your hod, your honor, your glory, your Ruach on him, and the people will follow him, l'man yishmu kol adat b'nei Yisrael. And here is for the first time the moment in which Yeshua is designated to be Moshe's successor. Interesting observation, menatata mehodcha, from your spirit. There's a medrash that says, where is it? Where did I put it? Yeah, here. It's a Gemara in Baba Basra. It's also a medrash in the Sifrei. V'natata mehodcha alav v'lo kol hodcha. Don't transfer all your spirit. Transfer a part of your spirit, meaning a part of your Ruach HaKodesh. And, says the Gemara, that means p'nei Moshe k'p'nei chamo, p'nei Yeshua k'p'nei levana. That Moshe's light face shone like the face of the sun. Remember, Moshe's had that aura of shine after Cheta Ego, or the Pultus after Marmara Sinai. And Moshua's face also shone, but only like the moon, meaning it was less bright than the sun. Come back to that comparison, but that's based on this phrase, Natata Mehodcha.
Do you distinguish between Hod and Hadar?
Hod and Hadar are two different words. Hod here means, again, translating is hard. But there are two different words that go together sometimes, but they hold usually, in this case, is a reference to the power of Nevuah and Ruach HaKodesh that was unique to Moshe. All right, that's the appointment of Yeshua. From that point forward, Yeshua appears in critical places that are related to the entrance into the land of Israel. He's no longer Mishiret Moshe alone, now he is the successor. So, for example, in Sayim Bamidbar, Perak Lamed Daled, there is a moment in which Moshe is told to divide up the land of Israel by lots. V'yitzav Moshe et b'nei Yisrael l'mor zot ha'aretz asher titnachalu ota b'goral. This is the land, and there's a map, there's a geography of the land of Israel, and that land will be divided up by the tribes, and which tribe goes where is a subject of discussion. We'll get there. But the ceremony around which the tribes were divided in the land of Israel was a ceremony that had to include a representative of every tribe, meaning even though there was a lot, a lottery, a goral, it had to be confirmed by the elders of each tribe, the Nasi. And so the Pasuk says, Ela Shemot HaAnashim Ashein Chalu Lachem Et HaAretz, these are the names of the people who shall divide the land according to your inheritance. Elazar HaKohen V'Yeshua Ben Nun. You have the Kohen and the leader. And then one Nasi for each tribe. Nasi Echad and Nasi Echad Mimateh. And the names of the Shevet Yehuda was clearly going to be Kalev Ben Yefuneh. He's the only one from the original generation. And the rest of them, Shmuel ben Amihud, Elidan ben Kislon, Buki ben Yagli, Yechaniah ben Ephod, all the names, they're not names familiar to us because we don't repeat them. There are children, Bedel ben Amihud, but essentially they are a new generation. Bamidbar Lamedal. That brings us to the end of Chumash. Dvar. End of Chumash. Dvarim Lamed, Perek Lamed Aleph, Moshe's last day. Moshe's last day. Vayelech Moshe ve'yedaber tatvarim elokoi Yisrael. Moshe went and he spoke these words to Bnei Israel. And he said to them, Ben me'ah ve'esrim shana anuchi hayom, I am 120 years old today. Lo chalod latzet v'lavo. What did I explain the phrase latzet v'lavo means? To lead them into battle. I can't lead the army of Israel to conquer the land of Israel. In addition, God said to me, I won't even go over the Jordan. God will lead you over these lands. God will lead you to conquer the land. Yoshua, who over lefanecha, Yoshua is the one who will lead you and guide you. And as God has done to Sichon, and as God has done to Og, so he will do to you, and he will give you the land. Chizku ve'imtzu. Be strong, be courageous. Al tiru, al tarzu. Don't be afraid of them. Don't be scared of them. God is with you. And then Moshe turns to Yeshua, Pasuk Zayin. Vayikra Moshe li-Yoshua. Vayomer elav le'nei kol Yisrael. In front of everybody in a public ceremony, he says to Yeshua, Chazak ve'ematz, be strong, be courageous, ki ata tavot amazel ha'aretz, you will lead these people into the land of Israel. V'Hashem ho'olech lefanecha, ye'imach, God goes before you, don't be afraid, lo yapecha v'lo yazvecha. Moshe writes this all down, and he turns to the people, and he writes it in a scroll, and then God comes to Moshe, and he says, in the introduction to Shirat Hazinu, Vayomer Hashem Moshe, your days are numbered. You've come to die. Krat Yoshua, call Yoshua together. Hityatzvu ba'ol moed, stand him at the tent of meeting. And at Saven Vayelech Moshe v'Yoshua, and they go together, and there's a ceremony, and and Moshe says to both of them, behold, you're going to sleep with your fathers, meaning you're going to die. And after you, at some point, the people are going to sin. And I need something that they will know, they will understand, that will guarantee their loyalty. And so he gives them the song of Ha'azinu. V'yata kitvu lachem et hashira hazot. This song. V'lamdat b'nei Yisrael. Teach it to b'nei Yisrael. Make sure they understand it, that they know it by heart. Sima b'fihim. And this song will be a testimony to the eternity of my relationship with Israel through all ups and downs throughout history. Moshe writes the song. Vayitzav et Yoshua ben Nun vayomer chazak v'amatz. He commands Yeshua, be strong, be courageous, because you, atatavit b'nei Yisrael al-aretz, you will bring him into the land. They write the... So how many times has Yeshua been mentioned so far in this parak? 3, 4, 5? Now look what happens. Extraordinary. They stand before the people to read the Shira. Hazinu Hashemayim Vadabera. Right? Who read the Shira to the people? Not Moshe. Moshe and Yoshua. And so it says at the end of the text. I'm going to skip all the way to the end of the parak, to the end of Hazinu. ויבוא משה וידבר את כל דברי השירה הזאת בעיני העם. Moshe came and read this song to the people. Who? Vehoshea bin Nun. Moshe together with Hoshea bin Nun. And the Mefarshim are shocked. How did we come back to Hoshea? There's only two places in all of Chumash where Hoshea is mentioned as Hoshea. One was the story of the Meraglim where Moshe changed his name. I get that. But suddenly now he's Hoshea bin Nun again? What happened? And so the Mefarshim really, they tackle this one and they're mystified by it. And that's the last real place that Moshe is meant, that Yehoshua is mentioned. And in that context, so Rashi says, Lama kurimo tokan Yehoshua? Why is he called Hoshea here? Says Rashi, we'll see other interpretations in a moment. Because Yeshua wanted to be humble, even though in order to indicate that he did not become haughty, he wasn't, leadership didn't go to his head, although the dignity had been conferred upon him, he assumed a humble bearing like he was at the very beginning. Hoshea ben Nun. I don't need to be Yehoshua. Moshe called me Yehoshua. The problem is, with that interpretation, that it's an expression of humility, is that the rest of Tanakh, from that point forward, Yehoshua is called Yehoshua ben Nun Malei Ruach Chochmah Ki Moshki V'Samach Moshe Et Yadro Alav in Perek Lamed Daled. He's never, ever, ever called Hoshea again. He's in even a Chumash, he's called Yehoshua. So why is he called Hoshea at the reading of Hazinu? Zeman Ezra offers a different interpretation, which is, B'Shem Sheyu Ko Yisrael Yodin Oto. Nobody knew that Moshe had changed his name to Yehoshua. Mi Yodea Nashmo Moshe Yehoshua. That was just the story of the Meraglim. So everybody else knew him as Hoshea throughout his life. So it tells us it's the same Hoshea. That's really extraordinary, that even though he's referred to as Yehoshua in every reference in Tanakh save two, the people all knew him as Hoshea and not Yehoshua. Mystified. And that's the last reference to Yehoshua. We have two places in all of Chumash where he's called Hoshea, the Meraglim in here. So that brings us to the question with which I started, which was, when did Moshe change his name and why? Even the beginning of Sefer Yehoshua, Vayhi achrei mot Moshe eved Hashem, v'yomer Hashem el Yehoshua. If it was a matter of humility, he should say, God said to Hoshea. Not to Yehoshua, if he wanted to be known as Hoshea. Now he's his own leader. So what's going on? So I want to come back to the question of when Moshe changes Yeshua's name. According to Rashi, it was in the context of the Parsha of the Meraglim. We've identified Moshe Yehoshua as Yehoshua from the moment he went to fight Amalek. Even in God's words, Moshe is told after the story of the battle of Amalek, "Bisimba oznei Yehoshua." So what's going on? So the Rashbam offers a completely different interpretation of the story, that the name change had nothing to do with the sin of the spies. Understand, this is a very dramatically different interpretation, and you know, sometimes we get so used to Rashi's interpretation that we're kind of stuck in that mode and we take it for granted. We don't realize that some of the Mefarshim disagreed. And Rashbam says, in the context of this pasuk in the story of the Meraglim, Bamidbar Yud Gimel, Lo ata kara oto kein. It does not mean that he was called this at that time. He was already called Yehoshua earlier, Parshat Bishalach, Parshat Yitro, Parshat Kitisa. What does it mean? Hoshea ben Nun, here in the context of the Meraglim, Hoshea ben Nun shamayinu lemalo, who was the representative of Shevet Ephraim, Shenikrachen Bebet Aviv. His father and mother called him Hoshea. Uoto Shekara Moshe Yoshua. It's the same person that Moshe called Yehoshua. When? Listen carefully. Kasher Kishinasa Mishartó. The moment he entered into the service of Moshe as his disciple, Moshe changed his name from Hoshea to Yehoshua. Shekach haya min hagam, that was their custom. You took on a servant, you took on a disciple, you took on somebody under you, an Eved or a Mishoret, you changed their name. As it says, for example, Paro, when Yosef enters into the service of Egypt, Vayikrash Paro Shem Yosef Tzefnat Banech, Paro changed his name. Or Daniel, when he enters into the service of Nebuchadnezzar, he's changed his name to Belshazzar. Or Dehushme Belshazzar, Kishem Alarei. Or, for example, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, doesn't mention, but they were also given names, Babylonian names, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. In other words, says the Rashbam, the name change had nothing to do with the sin of the spies. The name change had to do with Hoshea becoming the Misharet Moshe, which is a very powerful answer. And then over here, in the context of the story of the spies, the only reason it mentions it again, Hoshea, Moshe changed his name to Yeshua, is because in this moment, he wasn't serving as Misharet Moshe. In this moment, who was he? He was the representative of Shevet Ephraim in the story of the spies. So he was called by his Ephraim household name, Hoshea. But the text wants us to know that it's the same Yehoshua that Moshe had named Yehoshua when he entered into his service back in the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim back in Parshat B'Shalach. You follow what the Rashbam is saying? Chronologically, the name change happened earlier, and the only reason it's necessary here is because in this moment he's representing Ephraim, so we need to. So he uses his birth name, like his birth certificate, right? His passport name, it says Hoshea. But we need to know that his nickname is Yehoshua because he was named such by Moshe. Rashbam really opens the door to an extraordinary story of what the concept of name changing is, not only in the context of Paro, but really throughout Tanakh. There are many places where names are changed. Rashbam listed two, and they were both done by kings. Paro named Yosef Tzafna Panach, Nebuchadnezzar names Daniel Belshazzar. In Malachim Bet, we find that Paro Nechol, when he pointed the son of Yoshiyahu, Eliakim, on the throne, changed his name to Yehoyakim. And Nebuchadnezzar, a generation later, well, a couple of years later, when he placed on the throne Mataniah, another brother, another son of Yoshiyahu, he changed his name, Vayasef et Shmo, to Tzidkiyahu. So here's Paro Nechol, and here's Nebuchadnezzar renaming the kings of Israel when they put them in their an expression of their loyalty, because that's what name changing was. It was an expression of loyalty. When you entered into the service of a master, one of the things that they did was they gave you a new name or a rename or a rebranding in order to link you to say, okay, the connection is to whoever renamed you. So from that perspective, says the Rashbam, when Hoshea ben Nun entered into the service of Moshe, Moshe names him Yoshua. Think about it like Bris Milah, right? When Abraham is given the Brit of circumcision, God changes his name from Avram to Avraham. And that's why we name a boy at their Bris, as a symbol of a reflection of the same idea. That the bris carries the symbol of our loyalty, our brit with God. And so God changes Abraham's name from Avram to Avraham, or Yaakov's name to Yisrael. In this case, Moshe changes his name from Moshe to Yoshua, as much as a reflection of Yoshua's service and loyalty to Moshe as a reflection of Hosea's loyalty to God. And here I want to add one additional dimension to this, which is something which the Mefarshim point out, that the Yoshua is the first person in Tanakh whose name is changed and to a Yud-He combination. What does that mean? Let's jump for a moment to a very mysterious pasuk in Shmot Perek Vav. Take us back to Yitzhak Mitzrayim, where God says to Moshe, I appeared to Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov through the name, through the impact, through the imagery, through the symbolism, whatever the concept means, of Kel Shakai. Ushmi Hashem lo nadati lehem, but my name, Yudke Vavke, I did not make known to them, or there's a whole discussion because Shem Hashem appears in Sefer Bereishit, but the idea is that there's a relationship between God and the world that is reflected in the name of God. And the reflection of Kel Shakai is one of God and the power of nature, God of creation, Elohim. God, and in that context, Moshe says, or God says to Moshe, to the Avot, Avot Mitzrayim and Yaakov, I was hidden in nature, I was Kel Shakai. But to Bnei Yisrael now in this generation, you, Moshe, I will see God manifest in the Shem Havaya Yudke Vavke. Okay. I heard this once from Rav Maidan. It appears in one of his books. Really an extraordinary insight. How do we understand this idea that Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, meaning from the Avot until Moshe, the name of God that was connected, or that we saw that was manifest, was the name Kel or Shaddai? So look at the names of the Nesiim, the elders of Israel, representatives of the tribes of Israel. If you want to know the names of the, right? Eile Shmot HaAnashim, Bamidbar Perek Aleph, Eile Shmot HaAnashim Sheyamdu Itchem, this is the names of the people who would be leaders of the census of the tribes, who represented the tribes. These were the Nesiim. Each tribe, Reuven, what was his name? Who was the Nesi of Reuven? Elitzur ben Shteyur. Tribe of Shimon was Shlumiel ben Surishadai. Tribe of Yehuda, Nachshon ben Aminadav. Tribe of Yisachar, Netanel ben Tsuar. Eliav ben Chelon. Elishama ben Amihud. Gamliel ben Pedatzur. Achiezer ben Amishadai. Pagiel ben Ochran. Gad Asaf ben Deuel. Achira ben Enan. Ela Kriyer Haida. What's the point? Look carefully. What name of God is embedded into the names of the Nesiim? Elitzur, Shdeur, Shlumiel, Tsuri Shaddai, Netanel, Eliav, Elishama, Gamliel, Pedatzur, Ami Shaddai, Pagiel, Eliasaf, Deuel. The same propensity that we still have till today to include God's name in names that we give our children was prevalent then, except that the only name of God you'll appear, that you'll see in the names of that generation, were variations of El Shaddai.
Okay. And so.
And Tzur, there's all the names too. Tzur and Ami, and right? There's other names too. But the notion, look how many names are bold that have the root of either Tzur, which is a whole different issue, El or Shaddai. There's only one in all of that generation, the very first, to be given a Yud-He. And that's Yehoshua. There's none before him that carry a name of God of Yud-He. He is the first. And it's a reflection of the fact that this is the first generation leaving Mitzrayim. They are leaving Egypt and they are coming into a relationship with God that is different. God manifest, God appeared, God revealed, Yud-Kei Vav-Kei. And so the first thing Moshe does is he takes his disciple, who's Hosea, and he adds a Yud to his name. It's no longer Shaddai, no longer El. This is now Yehoshua, Yud-Kei Vav-Kei. New name of God, new relationship. And from that point forward, we have lots of names that have Yud Kei Vav Kei in them. Yonatan and Uriah and Suriah and Yoshiyahu and Yirmiyahu and Uziyahu and go on and on. But up until that point, there are none. None. Only variations of Kel Shakai. Moshe takes Yeshua under his wings. Moshe is his disciple. He renames him. He says to him, your name is no longer Hosea. It is now the new generation of post-Yetziat Mitzrayim, of recognition of God's name, Yud-Kei Vav-Kei. We're calling you Yehoshua. Fascinating. And that's the name that stays with him, with two exceptions. The first exception is the story of the Meraglim. Says the Rashbam, why was that an exception? Because in the story of the Meraglim, he wasn't representing Moshe. He stood before the people not as the Misharet Moshe, but as the grandson of the Nasi of Shevet Ephraim, Elishama ben Amihud. He was his grandson. So as his grandson, he stood there and he says, okay, I am Hosea bin Nun. That's the name of his birth name. That's the name that's on his passport. That's the name representing Shevet Ephraim. Yehoshua was the name that when he represented his being the disciple of Moshe. And so we are told at that moment that it's the same person. Oh, this Hosea bin Nun, that's the one Moshe had named Yehoshua. Part one. Part two, what happened to Chirat HaAzinu? What happened to HaAzinu? HaAzinu, the only other reference. Suddenly, Moshe is called, Yeshua is called Hosea again. What happened? Let's go back. Devarim, Lamed Bet. The end of HaAzinu. Vayavo Moshe v'edibet kol divrei ha'shirah hazot b'osnei ha'am. Who? Hosea ben Nun. What happened? I'll tell you what I think happened. And this is not of the Mefarshim. But I think it emerges from the story of the Rashbam. Just like at the story of the Meraglim. At that moment, Hosea represented Shevet Ephraim and not the disciple of Moshe. And so he's called Hosea. In the aftermath of Shirat HaAzinu, God says to Moshe and Yeshua, this is the moment, this is the changing of the guard, this is the handing of the mantle. This is the moment I hand you the reins. Yeshua up until now has been the designate. Standing before the people at Shirat HaAzinu is the moment, the first joint ceremony between Moshe, the old leader, and Yeshua, the new leader. Moshe comes in, Moshe goes out, Hosea bin Nun comes in. Why Hosea? Because he's no longer Misharet Moshe. What is he now? He's the leader of the Jewish people. Before he was in Parshat Shlach, he was the leader of Shevet Ephraim. And in Parshat HaAzinu, he's the leader of the Jewish people. So he goes by his name, Hosea bin Nun. Yeshua was the name he had, the nickname that was given to him by Moshe. Yeshua represented a loyalty to his master, a loyalty to Moshe. But now he's the leader of the Jewish people. Now he's Hosea. Well, one chapter. Two chapters later, Moshe dies, Yeshua takes over. And the beginning of Sefer Yeshua begins. What's the opening sentence? Vayhi acharei mot Moshe eved Hashem, vayomer Hashem el Yehoshua bin Nun misharet Moshe. And in that phrase, you have the key to understanding all of Sefer Yeshua. because you have to understand the challenge Hoshea or Yehoshua faced. He faced stepping into Moshe Rabbeinu's shoes. Who could possibly imagine taking over the Jewish people in the aftermath of Moshe? Moshe was larger than life. Moshe led them out of Egypt. Moshe gave them the Torah. Moshe went up the mountain of Sinai for 40 days. Moshe was Moshe. How do you step into that role? So Yeshua has two choices. He can come along and say, I am Hoshea ben Nun. I am my own person. I am my own leader. I am my own personality. I am my own representative in relationship with God. Moshe died. Moshe's generation is over. It's a new generation, new leadership, new concept. Fine. Or he can say, I am now and forever Moshe's disciple. On my birth certificate, it says Hoshea ben Nun, but I forever will be known as Moshe's disciple, Yehoshua ben Nun Mesharet Moshe. Because what the people needed more than anything else at that moment was continuity. They needed that sense of connection. If Yeshua had gone in and said, I am different than Moshe, Moshe is the old generation, I'm the new generation, he would have fought every rebellion along the lines and along the ranks for the next 20 years. But what the people needed, and what is evident in all of Sefer Yehoshua, in the story of the conquest of Jericho, in the splitting of the sea, in the story of the spies, in all of the events at the beginning of Sefer Yehoshua, was that the people needed a reboot of Moshe's life in Yehoshua. And so he calls himself, he says, that's his humility. His humility is, I'm not Hoshea ben Nun. And his humility is, even though Moshe avdi met, Moshe's died. And now it's my turn to lead. But I will always lead as Yehoshua ben Nun Misharet Moshe. I will always lead as Moshe's disciple. Continuity between Moshe Kibbutz Torah miSinai and Misaral Yehoshua. Yehoshua has to be the continuity of Moshe. After that, you can branch. It's like Yitzchak and Abraham. You can branch out. But Yitzchak has to redig the wells of his father. There needs to be a second generation, or I don't have a link, I don't have a chain. Yeshua is that second generation. And he has to remain truthful and loyal to that Yehoshua, to that mandate of Misharet Moshe, the disciple of Moshe. Okay, I will stop here. Happy to take questions if there are. If not, or I'm always online 15 minutes before this year if you have questions next week. And otherwise, next week we will kind of move into chapter one of Yeshua a little bit more in depth. But I'm happy to stop here and take questions if you have.
Thank
I love
you.
what you say, Rabbi Shom. The word vayigah is among the last six verses of Dvarim. Vayigah might be the hagah of the name of Hoshea to Yehoshua.
I have to look at what you're referring to. You can send me that by email. I'm not sure what you're referring to, but that's fine.
Comment? Can you hear
Yeah.
me?
Yes.
So thank you for the excellent shiur. Regarding the name, the insertion of God's name into people's name, we have the name of Yehuda that has a yud k.
It does, but if you look at the derivation of Yehuda there,
Sorry, it's also a yud k vav.
it's
No.
not based on yud, it's based on hodaah.
Yeah. It's based
Based
on
on
the root of
Hodah. The
Huda.
root
Yeah.
there is not Shem Hashem. The root there is Hodah of Thanksgiving.
That's true.
So it actually does, but not because it's a reflection of God's name. It's because it's a reflection of the root of Hodah.
But
If you
the
look at
da
Yud.
of Hashem.
No, yes,
Hashem.
but not because of Yud Kei Vav Kei. Hodah to Kel Shekai, yes, but not because of Yud Kei Vav Kei. If
Thank
you look
you.
at Rashi there, you'll see.
Can I ask? It doesn't say when the first time that Yeshua appears with the milchamah, with the war against Amalek, says that he chose. He said, go fight. Now, how did he know that he could fight? If he was like a nar mesharet and he was young, then where did that ability to fight happened. And the other thing is, and that I heard from Rav Binun, you know, that Yeshua doesn't answer. And then he follows Yeshua all through and he says Yeshua is not, doesn't, never speaks. You know, it's Kalev that speaks even in the Meraglim or whatever. So.
Well, we'll get to the Meraglim too. Yeshua does speak of the Meraglim, but.
Right. Later. Yeah. But what I'm asking is, where did it come from that he could actually fight? Because actually that is afterwards his whole destiny to fight.
Right. So the answer to that question is we don't know. There's a backstory to Hosea that is not in Chumash. Much like there's a backstory to Abraham that's not in Chumash either.
Right.
Right. We don't know. We are introduced to Yehoshua in the context of that moment where Moshe chooses him as a general. He must have known, he must have had background, there must have been experience from Mitzrayim, but it's fuel for the movies, but we don't or Midrashim, but we don't have any textual information on Yehoshua's background, other than the fact that he's the right age to be a warrior. Right, because the Nasim were all older and the Meraglim were younger because right. Moshe sent them on a spy mission. They needed to be young and strong. And 40 years later, he's 80, 90 years old. He's 110 when he dies. So he's in his 30s, 40s. He's called a Nar relative to the other leaders. But we don't have any background information in the text.
So there's no explanation to that.
Nope.
Okay.
Yeah. Rabbi Shulman, I have heard a suggestion that goes back to last week's shiur, that perhaps Yeshua was part of the population of Ephraim that waged war in Canaan. I don't remember where I heard that from, but it's an interesting idea.
Again, last week's shiur, we predated the story of the fighting of Ephraim much earlier. So it wouldn't work chronologically based on what we said last week. But again, in the world of Midrashim, there's lots that you can fill in, but it's one of those moments where there's an enormous gap that can be filled in with all kinds of creative conjectures, but textual evidence we have none.
Okay.
Yes, Yosef.
Yeah. Okay. So there actually is a variant of my own name in Sefer Tehillim, Yehoshef, and that's mentioned only once, but still, at least retroactively, Yosef is called Yehoshef.
Well, I mean, in that pasuk there, I think is referring to Yosef. He is added Yosef al Eretz Mitzrayim, and yes, afterwards that was added, but it wasn't added at the time in Chumash.
True.
Right. Sure. Yeah.
That's true.
In the Shir Shayom for Wednesday or Thursday, I think Thursday actually.
Thursday,
right?
What about Eldad and Medad when Yehoshua goes over to Moshe then and says, you know, they're not
the Moshe claim. Yeah, I skipped that one. That reference, that's true. It's in my notes, but I skipped it. I think that's in the context of his loyalty to Moshe as a Mishoret. He says to Moshe, Yehoshua, how can you have more people than you've designated, right? They were a threat. That was a threat to Moshe's authority. Yeshua was standing up for Moshe's dignity or Moshe's authority, which is why Moshe responds how he does. So Yeshua is all along Mishiret Moshe disciple until he's appointed leader. And then theoretically he's given that opportunity to stand back on his own name, and he chooses to relinquish that and go back to Yeshua. That's essentially the Chiddush of the Shir. All right, I'm going to let you all go, and we will continue B'zat Hashem next week. Thank you for joining us.
Yishar koach, good shu.
Great year.
Be well.